Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Wrap-Up, a production of The Balance. Join Tom and $2 Bill Josh as they wrap up the last 24 hours of sports for you. Right now, here's Tom and $2 Bill Josh.
I am Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
All right, boys and girls, and welcome to the Balance of Flagships show, the show you wait with great anticipation for all week long. My name's Tom. Right alongside me is $2 Bill Josh. Josh, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning into the rematch weekend edition of The Balance.
Absolutely. The rematch weekend is here. We got a lot of football to talk about. Real quickly, we're going to wrap up the NBA. We're going to do our daily zap. On the other side of that, Josh is going to wrap up the NBA. We're going to do a little bit of college talk. And then after that, totally dedicated to the NFL rematch weekend right here on The Balance.
Friday's daily zap on NBA.com. A look back at an 11-game schedule across the league. Bulls and Pacers get you started at Conseco Fieldhouse. Derrick Rose, baller. 29 points, season high, 10 rebounds. Bulls top the Pacers, ending their two-game win streak. 76ers and Bucks in a tight one in Philly on Friday night. Sweet Lou Williams lived up to his name. 25 points, big three late as the Sixers hold on to win it by one. Pistons and Raptors north of the border. There's vintage Tracy McGrady. He had 22 points in this one, as the Pistons get the win, despite Rip Hamilton not playing. Bobcats, Celtics, Charlotte coming in with a season best four straight wins. Boston cares nothing of it. Shaquille O'Neal, 35 minutes of season high. He scored 23 points as the Seas get the job done. Kings and Knicks at Madison Square. Believe it or not, Sactown has owned the Knicks in this arena, and they did again on this night. Their fourth straight win over the Knicks. They take it by 10, led by Beno Udra. Mavs and Spurs. Battle of Texas. Without Dirk Nowitzki for the ninth straight game, Spurs would take advantage, obviously, and get the win 101-89, their fifth in a row. Hornets and Rockets in Houston. David West, a mean fella on this night. That dunk indicative of that. Hornets would rally from 16 down to win it in OT, 110-105. Jazz and Cavs in Utah. Cleveland needs a hug. They would lose their 12th in a row, their 22nd in 23 games in blowout fashion. Suns and Blazers in the desert. This one also a dandy. Steve Nash with 23 points and 13 assists. Suns beat the Blazers for the first time this year. Warriors and Clippers in Oakland. Monte Ellis, you know he can light it up. Friday night, no exception. 10 of 17 from the floor, 30 points for him. Golden State would win it by 10. The defending champs taking on the New Jersey Nets. Kobe Bryant, ridiculous. Working on his former teammate, Jordan Farmar. 27 on the night for Kobe. Lakers win their seventh straight. That's your daily zap.
All right. I'd like to thank our friends over at NBA TV and NBA.com for preparing that daily zap for us. Today, I'm going to break down some of the games from last night. We're going to hand out some midseason awards in the NBA. Bulls 99, Pacers 86. Danny Granger had 22 for the Pacers. Mike Dunleavy had 13. As you heard, Derrick Rose had 29 points, 10 rebounds. Chicago shot 46%, only turned the ball over 7 times. You're not going to win very many basketball games when the other team shoots 46% and only has 7 turnovers. Pacers continue to struggle. They'd be in the playoffs today. That's it for the team as it currently exists. They'll make the playoffs. They'll get swept Bucks will make it. I guess if you're a Pacers fan, you can look at that as a sign of improvement. Bulls improved to 26-13. The Pacers are 16-21. 76ers, 95. Bucks, 94. As you heard, Lou Williams had 25 points. He had a go-ahead three with 43 seconds left. Corey Maggette had a nice solid game. 16 points. 76ers are 10-3 in their last 13 home games. They started the season 1-4 at home. They're now 16-23, and the Bucks are 14-23. Pistons 101, Raptors 95. McGrady had 22, and only his second start of the season. 10 points in the third quarter. Andreni Bargnani had 31. That was Detroit's first road win since December 15th, when coincidentally they won at Toronto 115-93. The Pistons are 13-26. Toronto is also 13-26. Celtics 99, Bobcats 94. Good to see the Shaq Diesel have a nice game yesterday with 23 points, 5 rebounds, 5 blocks in 35 minutes. DJ Augustine had 19 for the Bobcats. That was Celtics' 6th straight win against Bobcats. Boston improves to 30-9, Charlotte 15-22. Kings 93, Knicks 83. Ben Oudreau had 29 points on 11-14 from the field. Maurice Stoudemire had 25 points and 13 boards. The Kings have now won 4 straight at Madison Square Garden. They improved to 9-28. The Knicks fall to 22-17. The Spurs continue to seriously threaten the Bulls' 72-win record as they beat the Mavericks 101-89. Parker had 18 points for the Spurs, and DeJuan Blair had 18 points and 13 rebounds for San Antonio. John Marion had 14 for the Mavericks. Dallas has lost 7 games without Dirk Nowitzki. The Spurs are 34-6. Dallas is 26-12. Hornets 111, Rockets 105 in overtime. David West had 29. Jarrett Jack had 23-7 for the Hornets. Kyle Lowry had 28 for the Rockets, and Kevin Martin had 26. New Orleans is 6-2 in their last 8. They improved to 24-16. Houston falls to 17-23. Games we're not going to recap, just give you the finals. Utah 121, Cleveland 99, Golden State 122. The Clippers 112. L.A. Lakers 100, New Jersey Nets 88. The Suns 115, and the Blazers 111. Currently in the NBA, the 5 hottest teams would be the Lakers, Magic, Nuggets, Hornets, and Spurs. The 4 coldest would be Pacers, Cavs, Kings, and Clippers. The midseason MVP would be Manu Ginobili of the San Antonio Spurs. At the halfway point of the season, I would say the Rookie of the Year is Blake Griffin of the L.A. Clippers. The midseason Sixth Man of the Year would be Gilbert Arenas of the Magic. Midseason Coach of the Year, Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs. And my midseason NBA first team, point guard Darren Williams of the Utah Jazz, shooting guard Dwayne Wade of the Heat, small forward LeBron James of the Heat, power forward Kevin Love of the T-Wolves, and the center would be Dwight Howard of the Orlando Magic, and that is your NBA wrap-up for today.
All right, $2 bill, Josh. Thanks for wrapping us up right there on the NBA and taking us around the NBA. Also, thanks again for our friends over at NBA.com and NBA TV for putting together the daily zap for us that we run on the wrap-up every day. This is The Balance, the flagship show of, The Balance, the wrap-up, and Indiana close-up. Also, want to let you know, for those of you that are just tuning in, we are, in fact, live. We're running this a little bit later than normal, just because of just different things that have happened and scheduling and so forth. But we should be back to normal next week. Now, before we get into the NFL, which is really what we're all here to talk about, we've got the Ravens and the Steelers getting ready to take the field here, and they will be kicking off right at 4:30 Eastern time. Should be a great battle. But what I want to do is take a real quick trip around the NCAA. $2 bill, Josh, what's going on in the NCAA men's basketball right now?
Last night, Butler 87, Detroit 64. Matt Howard had 17 for the Bulldogs. Kyle Marshall had 16. Simmons had 19 for the Detroit Mercy Titans. Butler held Detroit scoreless for the last 5:26 of the first half, but their lead went from 33-20 to 42-20. Butler improves to 13-5, 5-1 in the Horizon. Detroit falls to 10-8, 4-2. Valpo 71, Wright State 60. Wood had 26 points for the Valpo Crusaders. Von Duggins had 19 for Wright State. Valpo rallied from 14 down to win the game. Valpo is 13-5, 5-1 in the Horizon League. Should be a good game in a couple weeks when they come to Hinkle Fieldhouse to take on the Butler Bulldogs. Hopefully the bounce will be at Hinkle Fieldhouse, bringing pregame to you. Wright State 11, fell to 11-7 and 4-2. Earlier today in college basketball, number 17 Louisville beat Marquette 71-70. They were down 20 with 5 minutes to go and 1-1. Georgetown beat Rutgers. Syracuse beat Cincinnati. Duquesne beat Temple. And Kansas just beat Nebraska. There is 18 more games involving top 25 teams to play today. Illinois plays Wisconsin. At 3:30, that game is currently going on. UK and LSU just tipped off. Texas and Oklahoma are about to tip off. Central Florida and Southern Methodist are about to tip off. Ohio State, Penn State tip off at 5:30. Tom's second favorite college basketball team, San Diego State, tips off against Steve Alford's New Mexico Lobos at 6 p.m. on CBS College Sports. Pitt plays Seton Hall at 7. IU plays Michigan at 8 on the Big Ten Network, and IUPUI plays South Dakota State at 7 p.m. And that's the NCAA wrap-up.
All right, Mr. Josh, $2 bill, Josh, thanks so much for the wrap-up there of the NCAA men's basketball. Well, that's right, boys and girls, it is that time of year.
There's three quarterbacks in this football team. Whichever one starts, starts. Whichever one don't, we'll back them up. Period. Cut and dry. It's nobody's concern but ours. Nobody. Next.
Injuries from the game.
Talk to the trainer. Next.
All right. Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
Who do you care? Okay. If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood, too. What next?
All right. Well, the winners stay, the losers go home, and that's right. We have a weekend packed full of NFL football right now. Our friends over at AP News and the NFL preview for this weekend.
This is the weekend when the top seeds in each conference get into action, and they're all rematches, and that's an oddity for the NFL playoffs. The most interesting rematch to me is number 3 between Pittsburgh and Baltimore. The game is in Pittsburgh. The team split with the road team winning each time. The Steelers won the division ahead of the Ravens with a 12-4 record because they had the tiebreaker. That doesn't mean they're the better team. This should be a fierce defensive battle just like it was earlier in their two meetings. These teams don't like each other. I think this should be a very entertaining defensive battle, a low-scoring game, and I think a lot of people will get their appetites wet for the rest of the weekend by watching this one. Following that, we go down to Atlanta, where the Green Bay Packers, who won 3 in a row, and all 3 games they needed to win to get into the playoffs, and then, of course, to advance in the playoffs. Last week, they won at Philadelphia. Now they go into Atlanta, a place where they lost a very close game during the regular season. It was a game they pretty much handed away to the Falcons. The Falcons wound up going on to a 13-3 record, the best record in the NFC, earning the home field throughout the conference playoffs. And now they get a Packers team that's pretty hot going up against them. I see this as a toss-up game. I think the real difference here could be that the Packers' defense is much better than it was when it last played in Atlanta, and I'm not sure that the Falcons are as much improved as the Packers have been over the last half of the season. Game 3 is a surprising matchup of the weekend. The Seahawks, yes, the Seattle Seahawks are 8-9 as they head into this game and are the first division winner that had a losing record in NFL history. They come off a tremendous upset against the New Orleans Saints, something that no one was predicting. Now they go into Chicago, a place they actually won. The best game that the Seahawks played all season was in Chicago. But they're going against a team whose defense has improved and so has its offense throughout the season. The Bears are a better team now than they were at any other point in this season. And that's one reason I think they'll stop the Seahawks' incredible run. But this could be a pretty close game, and it will also be interesting to see how the weather may affect Seattle now that it has to go on the road. The weekend concludes with the NFL's best team over the regular season, the New England Patriots, who also are the best team throughout the decade, against the New York Jets. Again, a bitter rivalry. This is one where neither team has any love for the other one either. And Rex Ryan, the coach of the Jets, has been pretty boastful about what he expects the team to be able to do. He's tried to make this a personal battle between himself and Bill Belichick. I don't think Belichick's buying that. I do think the Jets like to have their coach talking this way. It kind of takes the pressure and the spotlight away from the players. But the players are the ones who will have to stop Tom Brady, and that's a really tough chore. The last time these teams met in New England, it was a 45-3 rout for the Patriots. I don't think this game will be that one-sided, but for the Jets to win, they're going to have to come up with a much better defensive scheme, and they're going to need to make some big plays on offense that they didn't make the last time they were up in Foxborough.
This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
All right, well, that brings us to rematch weekend right here on The Balance. $2 bill, Josh, take us through the rematches.
All right, we're going to start with Ravens Steelers. I'm going to go ahead and preview these games one at a time, and then we'll get into more details a little later on. The X factor in that game will be Steelers kicker Shane Threesmith. Roethlisberger 6-0 against the Ravens in the last six meetings. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco has tied an NFL career record with 4 road playoff wins. That game's kicking off at 4:30. Later on tonight at 8 p.m. in the Georgia Dome, the NFC wildcard Green Bay Packers with a record of 11-6. Take on the number one seed Falcons with a record of 13-3. Earlier this season, the Falcons beat the Packers 20-17 in Week 12. The Green Bay Packers had 26 postseason victories, third all-time behind the Cowboys 33 and the Pittsburgh 31. Matt Ryan is 20-2 at the Georgia Dome. Green Bay had takeaways in 14 of 16 games this season, didn't have one in the Week 12 matchup. And the Falcons have 3 straight winning seasons for the first time in franchise history. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. at Soldier Field on Fox, the NFC West champion Seattle Seahawks with a record of 8-9. Go to the NFC number 2 seed, the Chicago Bears, with a record of 11-5. Earlier this season, the Seahawks won 23-20, week 6 in Chicago. The Seahawks must reach the Super Bowl to avoid the losing season. The Bears' first postseason game since losing the 2006 Super Bowl to the Indianapolis Colts. Bears making postseason debut include quarterback Jay Cutler, running back Matt Forte, wide receiver Johnny Knox, wide receiver Earl Bennett, and 3 out of the 5 starting offensive linemen. Seattle quarterback Matt Hasselbeck is 5-5 in 10 playoff games and looks to pass for a touchdown in his 10th consecutive playoff game. Tomorrow at 4:30 in Gillette Stadium on CBS, the AFC wildcard Jets with a record of 12-5 will go to the number one seeded Patriots with a record of 14-2. This season went 1-1 in 2 games, both teams won in their home stadium. Patriots won 45-3 on December 6th. Pats quarterback Tom Brady has 3 Super Bowl titles. Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez has 3-1 in 4 playoff games, all of which have been on the road. The Jets have 3 playoff victories their last 2 seasons, equaling their total from 1987 through 2008. Brady hasn't thrown a pick in the last 11 games, and these two teams make no secret of the fact they hate each other. Now back to Tom, so we can start discussing the games.
All right, guys, it's time. Yes, it is. The teasing is over. We are going to break down the NFL Divisional Playoff Weekend. And that's right. We are going live just as the first game takes off at 4:30. The Steelers and the Ravens. And that's what we're going to break down first. But one thing I do want to talk about real quickly, the NFL is now cracking down. Yep, you got it on the trash talk. No more bleeping and stuff on the field in the playoffs. Are you serious? Are you kidding me? The National Football League spends a great deal of time telling you that as intense as regular season may be, the NFL postseason is an entirely different animal. And the stakes are higher, hits are harder, yards are generally tougher to come by, and emotion can spill over rather easily through the highlight packages and so forth. And we love the trash talk. So I say let him trash talk. Of course, you're allowed to get emotional in the games and scream your head off. We're allowed to get emotional. We're allowed to talk trash. But the players are not allowed to do that, and they're cutting down on it pretty heavy. We're finding them money, if not suspensions. If the refs think that trash talk gets out of hand? Joshua, what do you think about such a stupid rule? Don't we have better things to talk about in the NFL?
You basically got that rule right. Not entirely correct. I did watch a 10-minute segment on this earlier today on NFL Network. They're not going to. You're allowed to trash talk on the field, but if you get, a flag for an unsportsmanlike hit, say the Jets hit Tom Brady after the whistle, that's when you get in trouble for trash talking. But if you just trash talk and you don't get in trouble for these unsportsmanlike penalties, the NFL will let you continue. It's when you start to get unsportsmanlike 15-yard penalties, they're going to start cracking down on the trash talking. But yes, it's a stupid rule.
Well, I tell you what, guys, anytime you want to trash talk, call the balance up right here, and we'll be glad to hear your trash talk. Absolutely, as long as you don't get us thrown off the air. And also, you as fans of The Balance, you're the ones that make the show tick. We want to hear from you today. Give us a call, 213-325-3434. Remember, you can also download the show right after it's over off of iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search The Balance. And on our website, we archive all the shows there, www.thebalanceonline.com. And, of course, you can post all the comments and stuff that you want on our Facebook page. Also on our Facebook page and on our website, you can find the link to our YouTube channel. You will not be deprived. We will make sure that you are completely in the loop and in the circle of trust right here at The Balance. $2 Bill, Josh, and I make sure that you are completely 100% updated all the time. So going to rematch weekend, it's the Ravens, the Steelers. It's playoff weekend. Throw that record book out. You either win or you go home. And whenever these two NFL titans clash, it's expected to be an absolute beatdown with bumps and bruises. And yes, absolutely some trash talk. So I expect that rule to be pushed to its limit today. And I guarantee you one thing, the Ravens and the Steelers probably going to give the NFL an NC-17 rating today. The Baltimore Ravens will go to Pittsburgh. They are, in fact, already there. They've done their walkthroughs. Everything is done. They're ready to go. The game plan is in place. So this should be a very, very good game. Certainly one of the marquee games of the weekend. Of course, all of them are going to be a great games to watch. And make sure that you watch them, and also post your comments about the games on our webpage or on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear your comments. And like I said, this will be the third time that these two teams have met, and they both have won on the road. The Ravens-Steelers rivalry is without the doubt the best matchup in the NFL because of the violent nature between the two on the field. And I tell you what, the hatred between the two cities, the Steelers fans believe that the Ravens are not worthy to be mentioned in the same sentence with Pittsburgh because of their history. Why Baltimoreans, if that's a word, feel that beloved Ravens don't even receive enough respect. Somebody's going to get respect there in Heinz Field today. It's going to be the Steelers and the Ravens. Josh, what do you think is going to happen? What are the keys to the game, and who's going to come out on top? Let's break this game down.
Okay, I'm going to give you six, just like I did last week, and I'll give you six keys for every team that's playing today to win. Key number one for the Baltimore Ravens, Joe Flacco loves being on the road in the NFL playoffs. He's not afraid of the Steelers faithful. He's already went to Pittsburgh and won there once this season. He needs another big game. The Ravens need to win the third down battle. They need the running back Ray Rice to go over 100 yards. It'll be hard to do over against the Pittsburgh Steelers, number one ranked rush defense, but he needs to get as close as he possibly can. They need four yards on first down at least 65% of the time. They cannot get into third and six and third and seven situations. They need to exploit Todd Heath's mismatches against that vaunted Steelers defense. And key number six, they need to keep the game close and let Billy Cundiff win it in the end. Six keys for the Steelers to win: their cornerbacks and safeties must jam Todd Heath Anquan Boldin, TJ Houshmandzadeh. At the line of scrimmage, they need to sack Joe Flacco. They need to use Mike Wallace to stretch that Ravens defense to open up the running lane. They need to take care of the ball. Ben Roethlisberger only has 5 picks this year. Granted, he's had out the first 4, but 5 picks in 12 games isn't bad. They need to out-hit, out-nasty, and out-hustle the Baltimore Ravens for 4 quarters. 3 quarters will not get it done. And running back Mendenhall needs to have a huge game for the Pittsburgh Steelers to have a prayer to win this game.
All right, Josh, I tell you what, here's my keys to the game on this particular game. Like I said, this is going to be a bloody battle that is going on right here today. The Ravens and the Steelers, they take the field. They're getting ready to do the kickoff. And my thing to watch, first of all, Flacco versus Steelers secondary. It certainly is no secret that Joe Flacco has struggled against cover two defenses, and the Steelers manage to confuse the third-year signal caller with exotic defense packages, courtesy of Hall of Fame defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau. At this point in Flacco's career and experiences against Pittsburgh, nothing should surprise him as much. And Saturday will be the time to display why the Ravens organizations brought in 2 playmaking receivers in Anquan Boldin and Who's Your Mama. The Steelers' weakness is in the middle of their zones, a place teams you don't want to venture out, because Pittsburgh can do some serious bodily harm. They can make it hurt. They can make it sting, boys and girls. Ravens tight end Todd Heap injured his hamstring on the first of the game in the second matchup, which hurt the Ravens' plans after Heap was successful in meeting in the middle of the field. Fullback LeBron McCain missed the second game as well after suffering an ankle injury. McClain is back, and he will be a huge pass protection. Heap will be a heap big helpful on mismatches over the middle, and wide receiver Dante Stallworth will be the ultimate X factor if he's used to go deep, which will create opportunities for Flacco to deliver the ball. Will Flacco have confidence to get the job done? I think so. I think there again. However, I think at the end of the day, I think Pittsburgh will win this. Now, on the flip side of the coin there, Roethlisberger versus the Ravens linebackers, Terrell Suggs. And the second outing, Suggs would have been the player of the game if the Ravens would have won, but he passed up a potential game-changing sack of Big Ben late in the game in favor of trying to stop him on the ball and in the backfield. Despite a bad ankle and broken nose, Roethlisberger escaped and threw the ball away to stay within striking distance of the end zone. And that is exactly what I think is going to happen again today. Big Ben is going to get some touchdowns. Big Ben will break apart the defense of the Ravens. Okay. Boys and girls, also the coaches. Yes, that's right. The coaches have as much to do with the game, believe it or not, as the players do. The coaches, John Harbaugh, has done a great job as the Ravens head coach, but he is developing a reputation. That's right. He's developing a rep for playing too conservative in close games. Now, that's my opinion, boys and girls, and it's my show, and that's what matters. And I'm going to tell you, that's going to make the difference in tonight's game. And Steelers head coach Mike Tolan, he is more trusting of his offense, and he will be aggressive in his playing calling. Both coaches will face an issue on two when it comes to making a gusty move or a challenging call. Harbaugh and Tomlin, who's going to come out on top? I certainly think that, like I said before, the Pittsburgh wins this game, not hands down, but does win the game. And the last and final thing you got to watch for in this game, yep, those striped zebras running up and down the field. The officials, they're gonna be out there in force tonight, especially in this game that's so physical. Illegal hits and unnecessary roughness have been heavily scrutinized by officials this season with intensity in physical and physicality that the Ravens and the Steelers bring to their game. The officials likely have their hands full should the officials allow them to play their game or control conflicts with the flags. And there again, that's when the trash talking is going to start, boys and girls, and that's when we're going to see how well they're going to enforce this new trash talking rule, and hopefully the officials won't be faced with a situation where their decision will essentially decide tonight's game. My guess, my vote, the Steelers win. It's a low scoring game, like I said. I look forward to come out 21-17 Pittsburgh. $2 bill, Josh. What are your thoughts on the other game going on tonight? What's the key factors on the excuse me, I'm losing my voice there, Josh. You see, you just let me go on my rambles there, and I lose my voice. But tonight it's Atlanta and Green Bay. What are your thoughts on that game?
Well, before I move into that game, let me give you my pick for tonight's game.
Sure, Raymond, go right. Go ahead, Josh. Give us your pick. Give us your thought. It's going to be wrong, but go ahead and give it to us.
Ravens win this game 7-3.
Oh, that low scoring of a game.
Sorry, I had a bit of technical difficulty.
Go ahead.
Moving on into the 8 o'clock game in the Georgia Dome, where, yes, in front of the Georgia Dome, they had to shovel snow so people could park and tailgate and drink their beer and wear their cheese heads or whatever type of hat the Atlanta Falcons fans wear. This is a rematch of a Week 12 matchup won by the Falcons 20-17. The Falcons have 3 straight winning seasons. Congratulations to an organization that thought they were completely trash when Mike Vick went to jail. And rather than go in the toilet, they have become the NFL model for how to overcome controversy and keep on rolling. Who has the edge tonight? In rushing offense, the Falcons do. In passing offense, the Packers do. In rushing defense, it's the Falcons. Passing defense, I would say it's even. Special teams, I'll give to the Falcons. Coaching, I'll give to Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers. 6 keys that the Packers want to win. They need a huge game from Clay Matthews III, nephew of Hall of Fame offensive lineman Bruce Matthews, son of Hall of Fame linebacker Clay Matthews Jr. They need to come up with some takeaways. They need to pressure Matt Ryan, maybe mess up the pretty boy's hair a little bit. James Starks needs to run effectively. He probably will not go over 100 yards again, but he needs to get 70, 80, 90. They need to use Uncle Mo momentum from last week to their advantage. And Aaron Rodgers needs to take another step out of Brett Favre's shadow. If he can win this game today, I implore you people, stop talking about Brett Favre. He's retired. He's yesterday's news. Put him out with the garbage. Don't bring him up anymore. Let him retire in peace. 6 keys to the Falcons' win. Keep the crowd in the game. Michael Turner needs 120-plus rushing yards. Matt Ryan needs to be patient. Let the play develop. Don't force it. Let the play develop. Use Roddy White to open up that Packers defense. Sack Aaron Rodgers at least 2 times. And exploit the middle of that Packers defense, which is vulnerable to both the pass and the run. At the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is going to take another huge step. The Green Bay Packers are going to keep on rolling. Matt Ryan's going to fall to 20-3 at the Georgia Dome. Mike Smith is a little too conservative for my taste, and probably a little too conservative for the Falcons' own good. And the Packers are going to win this game 24-21.
All right. Thanks there, Josh. So your thoughts are the Packers are going to win this game today. Well, we've been talking about this game all week long in the wrap-up. And I haven't changed my mind at all. I still think Atlanta wins this game, and I think that they'll go on, and we'll certainly talk about this game later on, but they'll go on to beat the Bears because the Bears will beat Seattle tomorrow. Now, here's my thoughts on the game. Leverage, tackling, the mixing. Okay, the Falcons have stressed tackling all week long, which could mean they could come after Aaron Rodgers with a passion. And they're going to see if he's ready for big boy football, if he's ready for his legacy. My thing is, I agree with you, Josh. Let Brett Favre go. He's retired. He's done. He's over. He's not a Packer anymore. Aaron Rodgers is your new quarterback of the future. Can he make it happen? Can he stand up to the Falcons' defense? He will make quick throws to his wide receivers, Donald Driver and Greg Jennings, on slants to get the ball out because there is going to be some pressure. Believe that. And the Falcons have to tackle quickly and not to let quick throws get into long runs. And that is really one of the key things that Atlanta is going to do very well. And they are going to come after Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to put the pressure on him, and they're going to make him hurt. They're going to make him sting, and they're going to make him earn his win today. And Obi Magoogie. I tell you whatever happened to just simple names like Tom, Josh, versus Clay Matthews. The Falcons pro football fullback is Lee Turner to the edge, and to get him revved up for the shot at the second level of the defense, Matthews will be in the neighborhood. He'll be down in the hood on some of those plays in the 3 and 4. Majeli Heli, however you say his name, is supposed to get him out of the way. The Falcons have seen a lot of 3 and 4 defenses this season, and they know how to attack the outside backer. And Majeli Heli, Macaroni, is going to catch a pass or two out of the backfield to keep a drive going. The better Atlanta runs the ball, the better chance it has to win, because Rodgers will sit and stew on the sideline and not lead the offense. And you certainly want to make sure that you keep Mr. Rodgers in his neighborhood over on the sideline. Chad Clifton, the Packers, left tackle versus John Abraham, the Falcons defensive end. Abraham, Father Abraham, that's right. Father Abraham leads Atlanta with 13 sacks. It's hard to get Rodgers, but Abraham needs at least to make him step up where tackle Jonathan Bubox can make him play on the quarterback. Another thing to look out for, the red zone. The Packers have been the better team in the red zone. That is true because Mr. Rodgers can make plays with his feet. He can dance around with his feet. He can dance around in that pocket. But he's more mobile than Ryan, which is why the Packers have the edge at this position. Even if Ryan wins a lot of games at home, if the Packers get inside the 24 times, Atlanta has to force a couple of field goals, and that's going to be a big deal in this game. It's going to play a big part in this game. Turnovers versus penalties. The Packers have the better quarterback. That is true. I am not going to say that they don't. Mr. Rodgers is a very good quarterback. He is writing a very good legacy, and he's going to continue to write that. I just think that this year ends tonight. They have better wide receivers. When they throw the ball, their completions are longer. It's all about turnovers and penalties, which is why the Falcons will win. I know, Josh. Green Bay plays Minnesota every year, which is inside and buttoned up to the nose. The Packers can handle a little racket, but the season suggests that Atlanta makes fewer mistakes than the Packers. And that, my friend, is going to cost them the game tonight. I think the Packers win 27. I think the Falcons win 27-24 over the Packers. Now, I am on the fence there, and I agree with you, Josh. Logic does tell me that Green Bay, to pick Green Bay, they have better wide receivers except for Mr. White. and a better secondary and a better quarterback because Rodgers has a better run. And I know all you Game Hawks are jumping on the Packer bandwagon. All you cheeseheads believe that this is your year. All you cheeseheads believe that Aaron Rodgers is your Messiah. But tonight the Falcons offense line will allow less than 23 sacks, so Ryan stays clean and makes the plays late, so Matt Bryan can win the game with a field goal. Falcons by 2.5. Josh, there you have it. Falcons win tonight, and that is how it happens.
All right, going back to this game for a little bit. Yes, you're right. It's inside the dome, and that's a bad thing. It's a really, really bad thing for the Atlanta Falcons. If I was the owner, I would have cut the top off the building. Aaron Rodgers, the last four times in a dome, he's thrown for at least 340 yards and three touchdowns. If he goes off like that tonight, and history suggests that he will, the fact that it's in the Georgia Dome is the biggest X factor in this game. He's great outside, but when you put him inside and there's no wind, there's no rain, there's no snow, and he can stand there, he can look to Donald Driver, he can look to his Greg Jennings, he can dance around in the pocket, and if the Falcons want to come collapse the pocket, that's fine. The Packers are content to let Aaron Rodgers touch the ball and kill the Falcons that way. At the end of the day, Falcons had a great year. They're 13-3. They're the NFC number one seed. But that's like saying you're the number one team in high school JV football. I'm not impressed that you won the NFC. Congratulations. You have a home game. Go out, tailgate, enjoy it. After tonight, you can see your Atlanta Falcons to be determined based on the collective bargaining agreement. I think tonight Aaron Rodgers proves he is the best young quarterback in the game of football today, bar nobody. Sam Bradford would be number two, but Bradford's far from being on Aaron Rodgers' level. Back to Tom now.
All right, Josh. Well, I tell you what, we want to hear your thoughts on the games. Give us a call, 213-325. Oh, I'm so sorry. 917-889-8516. 917-889-8516. Or you can certainly post your comments on Facebook or on our website, www.thebalance. Remember, right after this show, to download tonight's show, our rematch weekend, The Balance, right here on Blog Talk Radio. My name's Tom. Right alongside me, as usual, is my co-host and that great analysis, $2 Bill, Josh. We will be right back, and on the other side of the break, we'll break down the other two games of rematch weekend.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today. Do you like what you hear on the Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle? Then check us out on the World Wide Web. Facebook, search The Balance. Twitter, T-Balance. You can also send us an email at tbalance@ymail.com. And at any time, check us out on www.thebalanceonline.com.
Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. You make no sense. You know how cretinous you sound when you think that a broadcaster can affect what happens on a game? How stupid you sound? How infantile?
All right. Welcome back to The Balance Rematch Weekend. Right alongside me, my name's Tom. Right alongside me is $2 Bill Josh. You can also catch our shows on iTunes, on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. We want to take your calls. Give us a call, 917-889-8516. All right, we're continuing on with our rematch weekend, and one of the biggest games on the bill is the New England Patriots and the New York Jets. Joshua, break it down for us.
All right, this is the second game tomorrow. This is the 4:30 game in Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. I'm with my Boston Red Sox. Not much else good comes out of Boston other than the Red Sox and the Patriots. These two teams went 1-1 in the two games this season. Patriots won 45-3 on December 6th. Tom Brady, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, has 3 Super Bowl titles, but unfortunately for you Patriot fans, not one of those 3 titles will get you any points on the board tonight. Quarterback Mark Sanchez is 3-1 in 4 playoff games, all on the road for the New York Jets. Like we talked about earlier, the Jets have 3 playoff victories from the last 2 years, equaling their total from 87 through 2008. Brady hasn't thrown a pick in the last 11 games. And both teams absolutely hate each other. For the first time that I can remember, Bill Belichick, Wes Welker, and Tom Brady started doing a little bit of trash talking this week. Normally they just let the opponent do it. So I'm thinking the New York Jets have the New England Patriots a little bit out of their game. It's unlike the Patriots to respond with trash talking back. And with the rush offense, the Jets had the advantage in pass offense. The Patriots had the advantage in rush defense. The Jets had the advantage. The pass defense is even. Special teams goes to the Jets. Coaching goes to the Patriots. So in those 6 categories, Jets 3, Patriots 2, even 1. That's about how this game will go. If the New York Jets want to win tonight, their X factor is kick returner, wide receiver, quarterback, punt returner. It kicks a little bit, maybe runs football a little bit out of the running back position, Brad Smith, who's quarterback in college at the University of Missouri. And there's 6 keys to win this game. LaDainian Tomlinson and Sean Green need to combine to go over 150 yards. Should be relatively easily done. They need to make this game personal for 4 quarters. They need to... Rex Ryan came to New York 2 years ago and said he didn't come to New England to kiss Bill Belichick's rings. Tonight he gets a chance to prove that he indeed didn't come to New York to kiss Bill Belichick's rings. Darrell Revis could take Wes Welker completely out of the game. He could put Cromartie over on Deion Branch, and if the Jets could successfully do that, I fail to see who Patriots have that can beat the Jets. Sanchez needs to stay nice, cool, calm, collected. Trust his linemen, stay at home in the pocket. He'll be well protected. They need to get a lot of pressure on this Patriots defense, and yes, I'll give you this Patriots defense is a very impressive defense, but it's young, inexperienced. Made up mostly of first or second year players. This is the playoffs. This is not the regular season. This game will be faster than the regular season. When you analyze statistics, the Patriots defense has not shown that they are capable of helping the Patriots rally if you can get a lead on the New England Patriots. So if the Jets can get a lead, I don't think the Patriots defense will know what to do, and that'll put the Patriots in a bad situation. They need to get to Tom Brady early and often. They need to get to him, put a little bit of worried look on Giselle's face, get her a little bit worried that Tom Brady's not going to walk off the football field. As a Colts fan, I wouldn't be all that sad if he didn't, but no, seriously, just beat him up a little bit. This game's very, very personal. Patriots X factor is running back Danny Woodhead, who was cut by the New York Jets earlier this year. They need to pick up 4 to 5 yards on first down. They cannot get into a third and long situation against this vaunted Jets defense. The Colts tried that, and it did not work. Running back Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who happened to go to Indiana University, needs to gain over 100 yards. They need to get huge games out of their tight end, Hernandez and Gronkowski. However, there's a report that Aaron Hernandez, their star tight end out of the University of Florida, may not play in this game. They need to make Mark Sanchez beat you. Sanchez is 3-1 in the playoffs. Most of that's based off his defense and his special teams. Sanchez has yet to prove that he can actually beat you in the playoffs. They need to hit the holes in the Jets' run defense. The Indianapolis Colts gained 95 yards against the New York Jets. The Colts are one of the worst running teams in the National Football League. The Patriots have Danny Woodhead. Tom Brady can run a little bit. They have Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. They have Fred Taylor, the legendary Jacksonville Jaguar backup, who's now mainly a third down back with New England Patriots. So they have plenty of weapons in their toolbox from the running back position. And they need to use all that trash talking from the New York Jets as motivation. But they need to prove that the Jets haven't got them off their game. I believe they have. That's why I'm picking the Jets 30-27.
All right. Well, I can tell you one thing. It has been a weekend of trash talk. And that is absolutely for sure, and nobody does it better than Mr. Rex Ryan. But I'm going to tell you, Mr. Bill Belichick's Patriots will destroy Rex Ryan's Jets tomorrow afternoon. I just think that they're just too strong. Josh, the only fetish Bill Belichick has is winning. Feet, legs, people wearing furry outfits, none of that entices him. He just wants to win football games so much, everything else in life becomes a distraction. Can you imagine Bill Belichick making a foot fetish video with his wife? Of course not. That's a waste of time. The feet, Belichick would think you can't sleep with the feet. So, you know, Rex Ryan's a little bit different, though, I guess. Oh, man, Falstaff and a headset walking, a walking quote machine who generates internet page views at a faster clip than Brett Favre's text pictures. But Rex is all a bluster. If he loses to the Patriots, he'll be flipping fans off at the next UFC fight. He'll get over the defeat and come back next year talking more trash. Belichick is different. He marinates his defeat. He pulls his hoodie over his head and hibernates like the Emperor in The Return of the Jedi. Every thought comes back to football. Every waking moment is an opportunity to gain a competitive advantage. And when you have a coach like that, when you have a leader like that, when you have a team like that, and you have a strong, strong, deep defense and secondary, Brady, Belichick, and the Patriots get the job done this good. Wonder how good at he does, let's try that again. I'm really practicing my English language there, Josh. But ever wonder how good at what makes Bill Belichick so good at what he is? His coaching tree has no branches. Everyone who has left him to succeed on his own has fallen on the forest floor, boys and girls, looking up all days at the sky above. Bill Belichick's brilliance is solitary. Romeo Crennel, Josh McDaniels, Eric Mangini, and Charlie Weiss. Failure, 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 failure. Belichick could plug into your Aunt Gladys and have her named coordinator of the year. That's what he does. He does it good. He wins game. He's in his element tonight. He's at Gillette Stadium. He's playing the Jets. It is an opportunity for him to write another story of the Patriots slash Ming dynasty, and that's what it is. And there is no doubt in my mind that Mr. Belichick will come out a winner. And I'm going to tell you what, Rex Ryan does have a life outside football. That means that you'd rather spend time with Rex Ryan, having a beer with him, invite him over for the Super Bowl, marry him, and make a video where your feet hang outside the window, and he pretends to be a police officer, but you wouldn't rather pick him as your coach of your team of your football game, boys and girls. No way, no how. You want a robot, a football man who cares so much about winning. If you stand next to him, just the aroma of success will make you a second-hand winner, and you will look like a genius too. What's more, Belichick has been outside the Super Bowl winner's circle for longer than you think. How long? 5 seasons have come and gone since Super Bowl, the last time the Patriots were in the Super Bowl. Since that time, Belichick has begun to look downright mortal a pedestrian 5-4 record in the playoffs and a Super Bowl loss with an 18-0 team that is so close to perfection, Belichick probably still wakes up at night thinking about David Tyree's helmet catch. This is Belichick's time to return to prominence. He, like I just said, it is his element. It is his time. He believes he deserves it to snag his fourth Super Bowl and win that will put him alone with former Steeler Chuck Knoll as the only coach in NFL history to win four Super Bowls. Belichick needs this distinction like we need oxygen. He lives for these games. This is why the Patriots are going to win by double digits on Sunday, tomorrow. Sunday, the Jets go down, boys and girls. And then after the game, Bill Belichick is going to jog across the field, put his hand out of that hoodie, and avoid engaging Rex Ryan in any kind of conversation. He'll already be thinking about the game plan for the AFC title game, which I'm quite sure will be against the Pittsburgh Steelers, running formations through his mind like the chess computer that hardly anyone can beat Deep Blue on the football field. But you can't blame Rex Ryan for trying to engage Belichick in a war of words before this game. Heck, it worked for the Colts, right? He's seen the tape. He knows his team's inferior to the Patriots. Remembers well the 45-3 passing that the Patriots put on his team just a little bit more than a month ago. So what does he do? Rex calls out everyone on the Patriots, including their coach, takes a shot at Mr. Brady for not watching the wild card games, and he says he's no Peyton Manning. Brady doesn't take the bait, but Ryan heaps on the commentary and says the game will be decided by the better of the coach. If that's true, Mr. Ryan, you've already lost. You might as well stay in the hotel room and watch the game yourself. Not to be outdone, Rex Ryan's defensive back, Antonio Cormati, he of a multiple children whose names cannot remember, steps up to the mic and actually calls Brady a, well, you know what he called him. Irony, I'm going to tell you, here's what's going to happen, boys and girls. Meet the Jets' new game plan. If you can't beat them, infuriate them. Get the Patriots so wrapped up in fury that they don't come out and execute the game plan and try to get the Belichick and his crew to try so hard to embarrass the Jets that they don't take care of their own business. It's an interesting ploy, I would say, but it's one that's rooted in desperation, the loud bellowing rage of the wild boar that's already been stuck by a spear and knows it has little time left to live. That is the New York Jets. The Patriots win. I'm going to step off my soapbox there, Josh. The Patriots win 38-16. Tomorrow. Bye-bye, Rex Ryan. Go home. Play with your wife's feet.
I'm going to get back into this debate. First of all, Tom, is there any chance you're drinking Blue Gatorade? Because that makes me sick to my stomach.
I'm drinking my Pepsi Max here. We're going to try to get Pepsi Max as the new sponsor right here.
All right, but first of all, listeners, welcome back to the Bounce. First of all I heard was blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Charlie Weiss failed as a head coach, you're right. Romeo Crennel failed as a head coach, you're right. Eric Mangini failed as a head coach. But so did Josh McDaniels. And once they all left, so was Bill Belichick. I'm not going to buy into the fact Bill Belichick's a genius. Bill Belichick's a fraud. The genius is the fact he hired smart coordinators. I'd rather have Rex Ryan, who actually knows what it's like to call plays, than Bill Belichick, who'd rather let his assistants call plays. Since Charlie Rice and Romeo Crennel have left, Patriots have not won the Super Bowl. When they were on his staff, they won three. They made it to the Super Bowl with Josh McDaniels and Eric Mangini. Since they have both left, they haven't won another playoff game. I think Bill Belichick's a fraud. I think he knows it. I think that's the reason he responded back. Rex Ryan, he realizes he's about to get exposed. I don't believe in the New England Patriots. As a Colts fan, I would gladly be in the division where I get to play the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins twice a year. I will, however, give Tom credit. Rex Ryan used to shut up a little bit. But I can understand why he does it. He keeps the pressure off his players. The media is talking about Rex Ryan, not about Mark Sanchez, not about his New York Jets defense. There's no pressure on the New York Jets. Now, all the pressure is on the New England Patriots. And if you're honest, you've never heard the Patriots talk trash until this week, and that should be a sign that they're off their game. That being said, statistics would say that the Patriots had the better team. I'm going to say this time, stats do lie. The Jets are going to hit harder. They have better running backs. The Patriots have the greatest quarterback of all time. We can get in that debate at a later date. But he has nobody to throw the football to. If Aaron Hernandez doesn't play and Wes Welker's going to be taken out of the game by Darrell Revis, and Wes Welker, you might as well go ahead and take Reggie Wayne's advice and just stay in the sweats, because that's about how much you're going to have, how much an impact you're going to have on this game. It's about the impact Reggie Wayne has for the Indianapolis Colts. That is to say, zero, because you're not better than Darrell Revis. No one player in the National Football League is better than Darrell Revis, at least not from the wide receiver spot. At the end of the day, all I hear is the Patriots living on what they did 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. That New England team is gone. Rodney Harrison, Teddy Bruschi, Washington, Colvin, Vrabel, Weiss, Crennel, Fantini, McDaniels, they're all gone. They're not in your locker room this week in Belichick. They're not going to be at the stadium. In fact, Charlie Weiss is rooting for the New York Jets. So he's good friends with Rex Ryan. None of those players are coming in the Patriots locker room. None of those coaches are going to have headsets on. Bill Belichick has the opportunity to live up to the fact that he's called a legend. He's not a legend. His assistants are legendary assistants. Just like me and Tom work well together, Bill Belichick looks good because him and his assistants look good. They're all gone. After tomorrow, the New England Patriots will be all gone. All that mystique and history and respect and people bowing down to the New England Patriots because they won 3 Super Bowls last decade. Keyword being, last decade. Will be all gone. Tomorrow, look for Tom Brady to realize he's just a 33-year-old quarterback whose glory days are in the past. That being said, I do like Tom Brady. He is my favorite quarterback who doesn't play for the Indianapolis Colts.
Okay. Well, one thing for sure is that the Steelers are leading the Ravens 7-0. And real quickly, some things to watch again in this Patriots New England game. The Jets are on wild card weekend, controlled by second half with the running game. And that kept Peyton Manning on the sidelines. Mark Sanchez led the Jets down the field in the final minutes of the game. This led to a 32-yard field goal by Nick Folk, which now sends the Jets to Foxborough tomorrow. The Patriots embarrassed the Jets on December 6th, 45-3. I expect a much closer, much tougher game in the divisional round playoff. But I still honestly believe that the Patriots are going to win, and this is how they're going to do it. They're going to need to stop the run. They have to stop the run. This is a no-brainer. In this matchup, the Jets against the Colts really controlled the game with their ability to run the ball, like I said, and keep Peyton Manning off the field. The Patriots will need to stop the run and force Mark Sanchez to beat them. Second of all, the Patriots need to get off the field on third down defense. As we know, the Patriots were the worst team in the league on third down defenses this season. They cannot afford to let the Jets convert it on a high level on Sunday. If the Jets do convert often, they will be extending drives and keeping Brady off the field. And we saw this effect almost had the Green Bay game, so hopefully we won't see them have the same success. Also, Tom Brady needs to expose a weakness of the Jets' defense, which is covering the tight ends. And Gronkowski and Hernandez, Aaron Hernandez, are matchup nightmares for the Jets. As we saw in their last meeting, if Brady can find them as often in the middle of the field as he did during the Monday night blowout, the Jets will be in serious trouble. Also, in the red zone, the Patriots need to score touchdowns. This sounds like a really simple thing to do, but a very important one. And I don't think the Jets can afford to get into a shootout with the Patriots, and scoring 7 points in each trip will help them get up on New York and force them to play from behind. However, if the Jets force the Patriots to kick a field goal instead of scoring touchdowns, they will keep themselves in the game. And again, the last thing that I think also that the Patriots need to do to win the game, Shane Graham needs to be solid in his kickoffs and converting field goals. Graham had a meltdown in last year's playoff game against the Jets when he played for the Bengals. He missed two crucial kicks, and the Patriots cannot afford for him to be off his game against the Jets tomorrow. His kickoffs will be crucial as well, as field position will be very important to this game. Like I said, the Patriots will win this playoff game, or at least they should. And by no means will do I mean to imply by any means will the Jets make it easy for them to make it happen. In the playoffs, the quarterbacks are so very important, and in these games and in the difference, this matchup could be the play of Brady and Sanchez. And like I mentioned in the last matchup, if it comes down to the quarterbacks, the Patriots have a major edge, and it could be headed into a victory, and it will be a struggle. But again, like I said, I'm predicting a Patriot win tomorrow in Foxborough. The Patriots will continue their playoff victories, and that chapter's still being wrote, Mr. Joshua. All right.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I would agree. You made all valid points. I do think me and Tom are obviously Tom's a little bit of a Patriots fan for the weekend. I'm a little bit of a New York Jets fan for the weekend. Just because the Jets didn't knock the Colts off, and I believe if the Colts would have won that game, they would have went on and met the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. But, Tom, since you believe the Patriots are going to win, and I know you think they're going to play the Steelers, what would be, not who do you think, who would be the better matchup for the Patriots to make the Super Bowl? Would they have an easier time against the Patriots or an easier time against the Baltimore Ravens if they were to win tomorrow?
You mean against the Steelers or the Ravens? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that they would have actually, believe it or not, I think they would have an easier time against the Steelers getting to the Super Bowl than the Ravens.
Any particular reason or just because of the matchup?
Just because of the matchup, and I think that the Patriots play well against brain fart. Who did I say? The Steelers.
Yeah.
I just think the Patriots play well against the Steelers, and I think that they would struggle a little bit more with the Baltimore Ravens. All right, Joshua. We have come to that point of the game. And also, boys and girls, give us a call. We want to hear from you, 917-889-8516. Leave us your comments on Facebook. Just search The Balance on Facebook, or you can certainly follow us on Twitter, TBalance, or download the show off of iTunes. And you can always catch the wrap-up right here on Blog Talk Radio every day. All right. Rematch weekend, Mr. Josh. It is Seattle and Chicago. We've got the Cinderella team. What is the breakdown with Seattle and Chicago Bears in Soldier Field tomorrow?
Well, before I get into that, we all need to say attaboy to Tom. I don't know how he does it. I honestly don't know how he does this. I haven't figured it out yet. Called Auburn. He called Seattle. Comes up with some games. When he calls, you sit there and you think he's crazy, but somehow he's almost never wrong.
That's right.
So good job, Tom. You were the only one of us that called them to still be playing this weekend.
That's right. I am. And I don't think they're going to be playing again, but I think that the Bears will definitely beat them. But what are your thoughts? What are your keys to making this a game?
Well, they're playing at 1 p.m. tomorrow at Soldier Field on Fox. That's where you can find it on TV. Tune into ESPN Radio. Or if you live in Chicago, turn it to whatever game. Or Seattle, turn it to whatever radio station. The NFC West champion Seahawks, 8-9. At the NFC number 2 seeded Bears, 11-5. This season, the Seahawks have already been to Chicago, beaten the Bears in Chicago. So 23-20. So that puts a little bit of pressure on the Bears to prove that was a fluke. The Seahawks have already been to Chicago. They've already won in Chicago. The Seahawks must reach the Super Bowl to avoid a losing season. This is the Bears' first postseason game since losing 2006 Super Bowl to the Indianapolis Colts. Indianapolis' greatest football memory to this day. If not that, then it was definitely the AFC Championship game that preceded that game. The reason I'm going to pick the Seahawks is many, but here's the biggest one. Among the Bears making their postseason debut include quarterback Jay Cutler, running back Matt Forte, wide receiver Downey Knox, wide receiver Earl Bennett, and three other five starting offensive linemen. That's a whole lot of inexperience on that Chicago Bears offense. Seattle quarterback Matt Hasselbeck is 5-5 in 10 playoff games. He looks to pass for a touchdown in his 10th consecutive playoff game, which would be an NFL record. Actually, it would extend his own NFL record. Who has the edge on rushing offense? It's the Bears. Passing offense is even. Rush defense is the Bears. Pass defense is even. Special teams, it's the Bears. Stats, the most media and NFL and analysts and experts would tell you the Bears have the coaching edge. I'm going to tell you that it's Pete Carroll just because the guy makes you want to run through a brick wall with no helmet on. Seahawks X-Factor is defensive end Chris Clemens. He has 11 sacks. 6 keys for the Seahawks to win. Ignore the stats, the numbers, the records, the media. Turn off the shows. Turn off ESPN. Throw the newspaper in the trash can. Play free, loose and free. And Tom is the first one to bring this point up. I'm kind of going to steal from him. I hope he's not too mad. What do they have to lose? Go out and play football. They have zero, nothing, nada. Zilch to lose. Hasselbeck needs to play like the veteran quarterback that he is. They need a quick start. They must have a lead at the half. And if I can interrupt myself for a minute, it's now 7-7 in Pittsburgh. They need to get the Cutler, cause turnovers. Jay Cutler is known for throwing interceptions, fumbling the football, critical moments, the key game. They need to stop Devin Hester on special teams. He proved in the Super Bowl many, many times before and since he can take it back to the house. They need to be patient and find the open targets before throwing the football. The Bears' X factor is wide receiver, kick returner, punt returner Devin Hester. Jay Cutler must grow up. He must become a man. Not that he's not a man, but in the football world, he must become a man this weekend and win a big game. They need a balanced offense. They cannot throw 45 passes and only run the ball 14 times like they did in Week 6. Hester needs to break one on special teams. They need to have a huge advantage on defense. They need to use it. They got Brian Urlach, probably one of, I don't know, I'm going to say he's one of the 3 or 4 greatest middle linebackers of all time. They need to take advantage of that. They have Julius Peppers. He's a pass-rushing freak. He does things I haven't seen any other football player ever do. They need to dictate the tempo. They need their fans to be loud. They need to come out. Most of the time, I say we see the ball if you win the coin toss. If you win the coin toss, kick off, smash Seattle in the mouth, and welcome them to Chicago. They need to make Seattle play from behind. The Seahawks can get a lead. I think they can keep in front of the Bears. If they have to play from behind, I don't think they can do it. My pick is Seattle 27-24. I think all the inexperience, especially at the quarterback position on offense for the Chicago Bears, will just prove to be just too much for them to overcome.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks a lot, Josh. I didn't realize that you were done there. I apologize. Well, here's my thoughts on that game. I think Seattle is a little bit out of their element. Just like last week, though, Seattle doesn't have a chance. The Seahawks are a 10-point underdog. And just like last week, they appear to be outmatched by a superior offense. Just like last week. Well, almost like last week, right? They come in as the winner this week against the New Orleans Saints, and what a game that they played. And Josh is right. I did call that game. I thought that Seattle had what they could do to win. They are the Cinderella team of the playoff season, and they will get a whole new respect from me and everyone else, I'm sure, if they do manage to beat the Bears. But unlike the Saints game, Seattle comes into this week with the knowledge that they have a game plan that can beat the Bears, since they already did it in week 6. Chicago may be a better team than the one that lost to Seattle 23-20, but there's plenty of lessons that can be learned from that game. Now, that said, I do honestly believe the Bears are the more powerful team, and that at the stroke of midnight tonight, the Cinderella needs to go home. Now, in rewatching the game, the most apparent problem for the Bears was their inability to handle Seattle's blitz package. And in the first half, Seattle played relatively conventionally, and then they normally do, and they normally rush four, then mix in some blitzes at some opportune times. But late in the first half, the Seahawks realized that Chicago was unable to block blitzes. From that point on, Seattle's defense coordinator Gus Bradley went blitz crazy. Absolutely. In the second half, Seattle blitzed in nearly 70% of all passing plays, and it generally worked. Now, I know there's been a lot written about the Bears and how the passing game have took off once Mike Martz accepted that he needed to go to shorter drops and leave more backs and tight ends in to help pick up the blitzers. Make no mistake about it, Chicago has also went back and reviewed that tape. So chances are they're going to be able to block the blitz. So my saying is that Seattle has beat Chicago. Chicago has improved a lot. Chicago has the opportunity to move on forward. There is definitely some truth that Jay Cutler took up a three-step drop, which gets the ball out quicker. Only in three of his 47 called pass plays in that week 6, and the Bears tried to pass protect with only 5 offensive linemen and no backs or tight ends on 21 of the 47 plays. Seattle recorded 6 sacks and 20 total pressures as Chicago struggled to pick up the blitzes all day long. Well, I'm going to tell you, that's not going to be the case this week. And I think that there are some things that if Seattle does it right, they can beat Chicago. Now, I do think that Seattle could beat Chicago. I don't really think that'll...
Real quick,
go right ahead. Go right ahead.
It appears Ben Roethlisberger has fumbled the football at his own 2-yard line, and the Ravens have ran it in for a 14-7 lead. Currently, the referee, Jeff Triplett, is under the hood reviewing it. I will let you know what they decide as soon as they have decided.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And again, you guys can always keep updated on everything on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. And we have a play-by-play ticker on there that'll be able to keep you up to date on everything. Now, like I was saying, you know, I felt good about the Seattle Seahawks chances to beat New Orleans last Sunday. I really did. But don't bet the house. That's not good. But there are 5 things that I think that if Seattle does, and Chicago fails in their game preparation, Seattle could be the winner. Now, keep in mind, I still think that at the end of the day, at Soldier Field in Chicago, that it's a little bit too much for Seattle to bite off. They have to establish good field position. They can't turn the ball over, and they have to limit penalties. And they cannot, absolutely cannot, fall behind early. The Seahawks fail miserably on every one of those counts against the Saints, and Orlando Mayer put the opening kickoff out of bounds, which gave the Saints field positions at their own 40 to start the game. The subsequent drive led to a field goal on the Seahawks' first possession. Matt Hasselbeck threw an interception that gave the Saints the ball on the Seattle 35. That drive, which included two defensive penalties, resulted in a touchdown less than 9 minutes into the game, and the Seahawks were down 10-0. They cannot let that happen against Chicago, because Chicago most definitely will capitalize on that situation. It could have been an easy throw in the towel and phone it in, like they did against New York Giants. Yet this game had a different feel around it. However, the offense needed to score the next possession and so forth. So we know what ultimately happened. Like I said, I think that really Seattle could beat Chicago. But at the same time, I think at the end of the day, Chicago has too much weapons and too many things going in their favor. One of the things that they have that's a very key thing to their victory, and remember, this is rematch weekend, and when the Bears first played the Seahawks, there was a complete lack of balance on offense. And so here's some of the things that I think has to happen for the Bears to win, and that's simply this. Since the bye week, Mike Martz has done a great job of keeping a balance of offense. Whether it was too hot or too cold, Matt Forte has done a great job against opposing defenses in the second half of the regular season, and Mike Martz continues to commit to the run. Running effectively will open up the play action, hopefully leading to big plays with the Bears' speedy Gonzalez wide receivers. Pressure the quarterback. Matt Hasselbeck is a savvy veteran who has been in about every defensive formation in the NFL throughout his career. And in the two teams' first meeting, the rush men were non-existent. The Bears' Tampa 2 defense does not work without a pass rush. Hasselbeck knows exactly where the holes are and will try to capitalize on them and take advantage of them. If he's given the pocket, if the Bears want to advance to an NFC championship game, they have to put Hasselbeck on the ground, and they have to keep him on the sidelines and move consistently. Mike Williams had his breakout game against the Bears due to the lack of pressure back in week 6, catching 10 passes for over 120 yards. Second of all, they have to contain Leon Washington. The Bears' special teams coverage unit has been as sharp as it was in previous years. Not to say that they have been bad, but they've allowed some big returns of late. Leon Washington has 3 kick returns, 4 touchdowns this season, and he's one of the best in the league at it. Again, they've got to protect Jay Cutler. A common thread throughout the Bears season, no doubt, back in week 6, Jay Cutler was sacked 6 times in week 6. This game will only go as far as Cutler can take them. And again, if they allow a triple 6, we know that that's the mark of the beast. And we do know that if Seattle forces the mark of the beast, the Chicago Bears will go home a loser. But I don't think that'll happen. I think the Bears are injury-free. They're doing a very good job. They've did a lot of prep for this game. Be ready for the no huddle. The Seahawks caught the Bears off guard when they ran a hurry-up offense in Week 6 matchup. It kept the defense off balance and out of sync. If they let the Seahawks do it again, Hasselback will kill the Bears' zone coverage. So be ready for the Bears to do that no huddle and to punch them right in the mouth. And I just think that it's going to be one of those situations that the Bears will win, but it will not be a blowout. I'm looking for a 28-21 Bears win there in Soldier Field against the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, my hat's off to you. You've had a great season. Be back and ready to come again next year. Josh, what are your thoughts?
Before I get back into my thoughts on that game, let me update you on the situation in Pittsburgh. It is now 14-7 Baltimore. They scored two touchdowns in 27 seconds. The first one was on the running play. The second one, Terrell Suggs hit Ben Roethlisberger's arm as he was going back for the football. Apparently, everybody on the field, other than Corey Redd, thought it was a dead ball. He was the only one who decided to make a play. As the Baltimore defensive end picked the football up, ran it in 20 yards for a touchdown, while the other 21 players just stood there on the field. Tomlin challenged, and the referee decided that it would indeed be a touchdown. So that's the situation at the end of the first quarter in Pittsburgh. About the Bears and the Seahawks, you know, the Bears have a much, much, much better defense than the New Orleans Saints do. The Saints had a better quarterback. In this case, I would say the Seahawks had a better quarterback. Matt Hasselbeck has proven himself to be a good quarterback. He's taken the Seahawks to the playoffs before and to the Super Bowl. Jay Cutler's making his postseason debut. That's not usually a good thing, as I told you the last decade or so. Quarterbacks making their postseason debut are 5-19. Peyton Manning lost his postseason debut to the Tennessee Titans back in 1999. But basically, the biggest key, Seahawks need to come out, play loose, free, have fun. What do they have to lose? If they lose, oh, well, everybody thought they were going to lose. The pressure's on the Bears. They have to defend their home turf. The Seahawks have already won in Chicago. The Bears are favored by 10. Nobody thinks the Seahawks should be here, you know. So all the pressure's over on the Bears. And I don't know if you would agree or not, Tom, but a lot of times what decides playoff games is the pressure. And I think that could give the Seahawks a big advantage. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a fight for the Seahawks to win. If the Bears win, I have a feeling it'll be big. I'm going to call the Seahawks to win 27-24. I'm on the bandwagon once again. Congratulations to Tom. He got that right. Last week, I thought he was nuts or high or took some cold medicine or something, but he got it right.
Well, here's what it is, Josh. I mean, anything can happen in the NFL in playoff season, and especially, like I said, when you've got nothing to lose, and Seattle has been in that situation, and they did well on it. Like I said, I think that the Bears are going to be ready for them after the that week 6 game and the results of that game. I think the Bears are certainly going to be ready for them. We have about 30 minutes left in the show. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 917-889-8516. Want to talk some football with myself or $2 Bill Josh, whether that be the Bears and the Seahawks, Green Bay and Atlanta, New York and the Patriots, or the current game going on right now. It looks like Baltimore's up 14-7. The Ravens and the Steelers. We'd love to hear from you. Again, our number is 917-889-8516. My name's Tom. You are on our flagship station, our flagship show, The Balance, right here on Blog Talk Radio. So, now, Josh, one of the things that hasn't happen yet is the new overtime rule. And we've talked about this a couple times here during the wrap-up and certainly on the show last week. And what I want to do is I want to go back and replay that explanation of the new overtime rule, talk a little bit about the overtime rule and how that actually can have an effect on the outcome of a playoff game.
There's a new rule that coaches and the players have to deal with. At the beginning of overtime, if you win the coin toss and then receive and then kick a field goal, well, guess what? The other team's going to get a chance to either kick a field goal or score a touchdown and win the game. No longer is the first drive ending in a field goal going to end the overtime. That's what happened in the NFC Championship game last year, and it prompted this change. If the change works, I think we might see it in the regular season down the line. Most of the coaches are trying to figure out, does it pay to even go for a field goal on that first drive when a touchdown will win the game and end it right there? So it'll be a new dynamic to look at if we ever get into overtime in these playoffs.
All right. Thanks to our friends over at AP News there for supplying that soundbite for us. Josh, give us a good explanation of the new overtime rule and how can that really affect whether or not a team in their strategy, how can the new overtime rule affect a team's strategy here in the divisional playoffs this weekend?
This is going to be a three-part answer, including a little bit of vocabulary that you need to remember. First of all, say this looks like this could be an overtime game, although at the moment it looks like the Ravens might just go on to blow out the Steelers. Say you go into overtime and the Steelers win the coin toss, they receive the football, they go down and kick field goal. This is last year's playoffs. Game's over, Steelers move on to the AFC Championship game. Ravens, nice shot, had a good season, see you next year. This year, the Steelers will line up, they'll kick it to the Ravens, make an onside kick, but as long as they kick it and give the Ravens the opportunity to possess, that's the vocabulary word, the opportunity to possess the football. If the Steelers onside kick and recover it, the game's still over. But if the Ravens recover it, they go down and kick a field goal. Then we go into the sudden death overtime. Or say the Ravens kick to the Steelers and the Ravens come up with the safety. The game is over. Both teams will be determined to have the opportunity to possess the football. Or if the Steelers are trying to punt it, they muff it, or they mess the punt up, but it gets blocked, and the Ravens taking it for a touchdown. The game is over. Both teams will have had the opportunity to possess the football. Any time the team is determined to have had the opportunity, not that they have to have the football, but they have the opportunity to possess the football, and the next score will win the game. I think this is a great rule. It's not nearly far enough, but it's an improvement over what we had. I think we should be using the college rules. You line up at the 20. If you score, the other team gets the chance to match. If they score, then you do it again, and so on and so forth. I really like overtime in college, but it's better than what we had. As far as how it can impact the game, think of all the choices you have if you win the coin toss. Do I kick off? Do I receive? Do I defer? And then if you receive and you get to fourth and three from their 35-yard line, do you kick a field goal? Do you go for it? Do you punt it? Actually makes it really complicated what used to be a really simple procedure. It's a shame we haven't seen it yet. I wish I would have tried it in the preseason or the regular season. My biggest issue with it is you don't debut a new rule in the middle of the greatest playoffs of any sport on the planet. I don't know if you would agree or not, Tom, but I think this is the wrong time to debut it.
Well, I don't know about timing. I don't know about it being the wrong time to debut it, only because of the fact that they came up with the rule and said, okay, this year is going to be the year that we're going to do it in the off season. You know, so I don't know when do you enact the rule. I mean, obviously they said, okay, during the off season, okay, next season, during the playoff season, so you had all season to get ready for this. I'm just curious on when that you think that would be a good time to enact a rule like that.
I think you should have enacted it week one. I mean, I understand the fact they don't want the playoffs to end and Sudden Death. But do you really want to debut something that could have that big an impact in the playoffs with nobody having any experience how it will go, what it will look like? The referees don't have any experience in determining opportunities to possess. Now you get into the ugly situation. A coach could say, are you sure that's the definition? They needed to debut it in the preseason or the regular season so you could get all the potential kinks out of the way. Now you're debuting it in the playoffs. There's no time to get it right. It is what it is. So I just don't like the fact there's no experience in dealing with the new world. That's my biggest issue in debuting it in the postseason.
Well, and I can see where that would be an issue, but I can also tell you that there's no time like the present, as they say. So it is a rule now. We have to live with it, and we'll see if it actually is a rule that will get any experience. I think that out of all the games that are left this weekend, the current game that's going on right now between the Ravens and the Steelers would be the one game that I would predict that could put that new rule to a test. Again, the new overtime rule is in place. It is in effect, and it certainly would come to play in the strategy of one's ability to how they would go about playing their overtime game. We certainly want to hear your thoughts. Give us a call here on The Balance on Blog Talk Radio. We'll get you on live, and you can talk to myself and $2 Bill Josh about this new overtime rule or any of the divisional playoffs. The number is 917-889-8516. Also, we want to see your comments on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, search The Balance, become a fan. You can leave us comments all day long. Well, and you can also leave us comments on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. We're doing a special weekend, rematch weekend right here on The Balance, and we're breaking down the games, and we've broke down all of the games that are going on. And right now, currently, the Steelers and the Ravens are doing battle there in Pittsburgh. Baltimore is up 14-7. Myself thinks that Pittsburgh Steelers will come out on top of that situation and beat the Ravens to move forward into the playoff system, whereas, Josh, I know you have a different opinion on how that goes. Now, we've talked a little bit about how the NFL warns teams about escalating trash talk. Josh, give us a little bit of an insight about what that is and what happens. Again, we talked about it a little bit at the front of the show here. Those listeners that are just joining us here, go ahead and talk with us a little bit about the new how the NFL has warned teams about trash talking, and if they decide to push the envelope on that, what could be in store for them and what kind of penalties could happen if they decide to do that.
Basically, this rule was created because of the trash talking between the Jets and the Patriots this week. For example, Antonio Cromartie promised to wipe the smile off Tom Brady's face and put him on the sideline. If he gets called for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty against Tom Brady, that'll be that it was a predetermined act based on what he had to say in the media. He will immediately be sent to the locker room. I believe the Jets not only will have him ejected, the 15-yard penalty that goes with that, they'll also get an additional 15-yard penalty, which would be a 30-yard penalty and a player ejection. You can trash talk, but you cannot say you're going to injure somebody and then get called for non-sportsmanlike conduct. Basically, like, okay, taking this into the real world, not football, isn't the real world. Just if you say you're going to commit a crime and then you actually commit the crime, you get in more trouble because you told them you were going to do it. It's basically just trying to keep the game, okay, based on the violence alone and the hard hits in this game's already PG. They're trying to keep it from being rated R, trying to keep it family-friendly. trying to maybe make Rex Ryan be a little quiet. But that's basically what it comes down to. You can't tell somebody you're going to try to injure him and then actually attempt to do so. I think it's a good rule. I don't know if you would agree or not, Tom.
Well, here's the thing. The way I look at it is, I understand that the thing is, but I think that trash talk is part of football. But I agree, you shouldn't say, "Hey, I'm going to put your quarterback down," and or your quarterback's going to be leaving on a stretcher, and then make every attempt possible to make that quarterback leave on a stretcher. So, yeah, I understand that, but at the same time, if trash talk is going on and there's an event that occurs after the trash talk, my question would be, how hard is it going to be to link the trash talk to the actual incident? So, it's, you know, we'll see how it happens. Also, Josh, around the NFL, we've had some coaching changes. The most recent changes is Broncos point to the wisdom of John Fox. Crazy like a fox? I don't know. He certainly had a very bad season there in Carolina. Denver had a very bad season. They pick a coach that had a very bad season. What are your thoughts, Josh, of the Broncos getting wisdom of John Fox? Just right after his dismissal from the Carolina Panthers. It looks like that they've made them their man to pull them out of their misery. Can John Fox do it out there in Denver?
I think he can do it. An interesting statistic from the first quarter of this game. There was 106 penalty yards, the most penalty yards in the first quarter of any NFL playoff game in the last 20 years. Now back to the John Fox. In his second year in Carolina, he took the Panthers to the Super Bowl. He took the Panthers to the playoffs two other times. They consistently had a good defense. It wasn't until they got Jimmy Clausen, after they let Jake Delhomme go, that they really imploded. I think it was more a situation of Jimmy Clausen cannot play quarterback in the National Football League, no matter how prepared people said he was coming out of Notre Dame. If you remember right, when he was at Notre Dame was horrible. He's there. The coach gets fired. He moves on, the new coach comes in at Notre Dame, they make a bowl game, and they went said bowl game. The Carolina Panthers didn't make the playoffs the year before, they were a 7-19. They get Jimmy Clausen, they go to a 2-14. The coach gets fired, it looks like Jimmy Clausen's on the way out. So I don't think it was John Fox's fault. I kind of think it's just a repetition of what happened at Notre Dame. It looks to be the exact same situation. You make Jimmy Clausen your quarterback, your team falls apart. I don't know if you would agree or not.
Well, I do. I agree. I wouldn't have picked John Fox to be my my first pick there in Denver after the season that he had there in Carolina. But again, I wasn't privy to those meetings, so you know, who knows what the reason. We certainly want to hear your thoughts, the listener. Give us a call, 917-889-8516. Or, you know, post your comments there on our Facebook page. Just search The Balance, become a fan, and then we'll be glad to talk with you about that. Now, this is rematch weekend, and obviously the games that are happening this weekend are all very, very good games.
If I could interrupt real quick. The Ravens have came up with another fumble inside the Steelers' 10-yard line, and it's once again Ravens football goal to go inside the Steelers' 10-yard line.
No, okay, great. And thanks for keeping an eye on that for us, Josh, and that's over on CBS if you want to watch the game. As Josh is just reporting, you know, the Ravens did just fumble the ball. Again, this is rematch weekend right here on The Balance. Your flagship show, myself and $2 Bill Josh do this every Saturday. We're doing it a little bit later to cover our to cover the playoff games, and you know, we had some scheduling things, but we'll be back on time next Saturday from 9 a.m. Until 11, and we'll be doing the wrap-up every day. So I want to make sure that you catch the wrap-up. And just follow the balance on Facebook, and we'll make sure we have all the times of the wrap-up on there as those do vary from day to day to day. So, Josh, we've just got just about, just a few minutes left here in the show. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. What's going on anything else in the NFL, coaching changes? What other kind of coaching changes have happened? What can we look forward to? Teams, obviously, we know Harbaugh's at San Francisco. We just talked about John Fox being there at the Broncos. What kind of a season do we have looking forward going into 2012 with that proverbial elephant in the room that nobody's talking about, and that's the collective bargaining agreement? Do you think that there'll be an agreement reached, and do you think, Josh, that there'll be a lockout and the season be shortened because they cannot reach a CBA this year?
I think there is a potential there might be a lockout, although if you remember, I'm not old enough to remember, I think it was back 85, 86, there was owners locked the players out and they used replacement players.
But you're such a young kid.
Yeah.
Do you what year were you born in there, Josh?
84, I believe that was Dan Marino's rookie year in the National Football League.
Well, that's okay, Josh. Well, go ahead. I certainly meant to interrupt you for my humor, but go right ahead.
I think there will be a lockout. We all know NFL owners are greedy. All they care about is money. They will come up with if there is a lockout, don't be shocked if they get a bunch of replacement players out of the Arena Football League, that they go ahead and draft some players, sign some NFL players that don't have contracts, put some type of team on the field, and nobody's talking about it yet, but I can't imagine the 32 of the most greedy people in America would just sit at home and watch millions and millions of dollars not come into their pocket week after week, whether or not they have a deal with the players we're used to seeing or not. I don't know if you think there's a possibility they might use replacement players.
I would be very, very cautious about using replacement players. I mean, just can you imagine the Arena Football players coming into the locker room and then let the agreement be reached and the players eventually get put into the NFL or the Canadian Football League, what kind of drama that will cause in the locker room when these replacement players cross that proverbial picket line. I would be very, very cautious about the NFL using replacement players. I think that they need to come up with every possible way, every possible scenario that they can think of to get this agreement done. Both sides are going to have to give a little or a lot, depending on who you are and what side of the coin that you're on. But I think that for them to use replacement players, Josh, would be a huge, huge disaster and mishap, especially for future possibly future NFL players who would absolutely have no respect if they did get into the NFL as a regular player.
I would agree. By the way, the scores, Ravens 21, Steelers 7, still half the second quarter to go. But since we do cover all sports, and I'm not trying to depress you, Tom, or myself, or any other sports fans out there, the NHL CBA is up soon. I believe the MLB is either up after next season or the season after. The NBA collective bargaining agreement set to expire soon. All those leagues are going to be very, very contentious. I think it was back in 2002, 2003. I believe MLB was really, really close to a lockout. This time I think there'll be one because teams like the Reds, not so much the Cardinals, but cities the size of St. Louis and Cincinnati are getting tired of teams like the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Yankees being allowed to spend and spend and spend and spend and spend and spend. So I think when it comes time for the MLB, I don't know if you would agree, Tom, you're the baseball expert, that could be very, very contentious and could ultimately lead to Bud Selig being removed or stepping down.
Oh, I agree 100%. If the MLB comes to a problem with their CBA, their collective bargaining agreement, and there's another baseball lockout and baseball strike, there will be a situation to where that the commissioner is going to have to go if that happens, and I would like to believe that they learned their lesson with the first strike that happened, and that's why I think that the NFL knows what that did to baseball. And even to this day, if you talk to baseball fans, they will tell you, I'm not a baseball fan because of the strike. Stupid. I mean, it's over with. It's done. It's over with. But because of that, I think, and because of that crazy shadow that still lurks over baseball because of, and I don't think there's anything darker that lurks over baseball than the most recent steroid issue than that of the MLB strike. So I just think that you're right. If that ever comes down with the MLB and there's another strike or another lockout, yes, Commissioner Selig will be gone with a quickness, and it could be something huge. So, you know, that said, you know, enjoy the playoffs this weekend because there could be a blackout very much on the way. And, you know, this time next year, you know, of course, the Super Bowl is supposed to be here next year, here in Indianapolis. And will that happen? That's yet to be remained. I think it will happen even if we have a shorter season. I think that they'll want to get on with business. I think if anything that'll happen here, this is just my opinion, but I think if anything happens here, it will be the elimination of the preseason there. But like I said, for the next few weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, the National Football League will command most of the attention in the sports world, and the NFL playoffs are at the center of the stage. Professional football is the nation's most popular sport, and it's grabbing eye-popping television ratings and money every day, and it generates billions of dollars in revenues for lots of people, from the owners to the players, and of course, so obviously the businesses that depend on the sports in and around the arenas and so forth. So it could all go away in less than 50 days, I suppose. 2 years ago, NFL owners voted to opt out of extending the collective bargaining agreement with the players. That means that unless a new agreement is reached by March 4th, there will be no contract, and players say they are expecting team owners to lock them out, and owners argue that they want a new agreement to account for the money they've dropped on new stadiums and other investments. Much of the new revenue that owners have generated goes to players, not franchisers, owners say, franchisees, I should say. Jerry Richardson, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, said recently that from 2006 to 2008, the league generated $3.6 billion in new revenue. Of that amount, the players got a $2.6 billion. 32 teams have gotten $1 billion, he said. Baloney, said the players. They say the owners want them all to give back $1 billion in revenues. We put our bodies on the line, and we produce a lot of revenue. Dominic Foxworth, says a cornerback with the Baltimore Ravens, told reporters on a conference call on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens with this collective bargaining agreement. We certainly want to hear your thoughts on it. Give us a call, 917-889-8516. We got about 7 minutes left in the show. Josh, will the 2011 season be delayed by a lockout? Do you really think that'll happen?
I kind of think it will. I don't think it'll go as far as hockey did. I don't know if you can remember, but probably 4 or 5 years ago now, there was no hockey season. In fact, it would be about 5 years ago, because now, because Sidney Crosby's in his fifth year, and he's a Penguin, and he shouldn't have been. He should have been in the draft before that. I believe we would have went to Tampa Bay, but that entire NHL season got canceled. The NHL used to be on NBC, ABC, and ESPN. Since then, it's maybe on NBC on January 1st. The playoffs might be on NBC on the weekends. It's on Versus and NHL Network. It absolutely killed hockey. I don't think they'll miss the entire season, because NFL right now is the most popular sport in America and makes billions and billions and billions of dollars. But I think there's several reasons there might be a lockout. The owners want to go to 18 games. The players don't want to. The owners want a rookie salary cap. The players don't appear to be in favor of it. The owners want the money to be split 60-40. Owners, the players want to be split 60-40. Players, so if you sit down and think about it, okay, you split the money 50-50. If you want to have 18 games, that's fine. Shorten the preseason to two. Make two or three bye weeks. Come up with some type of guidelines, maybe not a hard rookie salary cap. I just think it's kind of petty, because if you think about what they're fighting about, it does seem that hard to fix. I think me and you could work it out in 20 minutes.
Oh, I think so. But it's going to cost them a good $2 or $3 million to do it.
I would agree.
You know, and speaking of money, I tell you what, I don't know if you saw this or not, but just a few days ago, Dick Vitale agreed to a contract extension with ESPN Baby through the 2014-2015 season. Dick Vitale agreed to a contract extension. I like Dick Vitale. I listen to him all the time. I certainly love listening to him during March Madness. Yeah, I love his passion for the game. I love his passion for the players. I think that he's a great asset to ESPN, but he's getting paid. And I tell you what, he's getting paid in a very, very big way. Millions and millions of dollars he's going to be paid by ESPN, which is a private organization, which brings me to my point. You can run your business however you want to run your business, and that's exactly what the owners are, is a private business. They're a private entity, and they have the right to pay their employees anything that they want to pay them, and demand a certain amount of money from their shareholders, like any other corporation out there does. So, you know, I think that people come too hard down on the owners there, Josh.
I would agree. And speaking of Dick Vitale, don't forget this year's March Madness will be unlike any before. First of all, there'll be four playing games, and my most exciting part, the games will be featured on CBS, TNT, TNT, and USA, whereas before they were playing four games at noon, but you could only see one. This year, if they play four games at noon, you can pick one of the four channels you want to go to, and you can watch all four games if you wanted to. It's about time you got the right to see all the teams in the tournament, and not just whatever teams they felt like throwing out there for you. And another thing, we'll get more into this on the wrap-up. But real quickly, Tom, what's your thoughts on the MLB telling Washington Nationals to stop spending money in a stupid way?
I don't agree with it at all. Unfortunately, we don't have time to get into it. But what we do have time for, Josh, is the two-minute wrap-up. It has been rematch weekend right here on The Balance. Josh, take us into the two-minute warning.
Tonight, IU plays Michigan at 8 o'clock. We absolutely need that one. And tomorrow, the New York Jets will send Tom Brady and the New England Patriots fishing or to Disney World, wherever they want to go.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Well, my name's Tom, and right alongside me, as usual, has been $2 Bill. Josh, this has been The Balance. This has been Rematch Weekend. We'll see you on the wrap-up.
Well, when I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was gonna say son of a bitch, didn't you? That's all, folks.